Good morning. I convene the House Education Finance Committee to order. We have a quorum, so we'll get started. Our first order of business is the minutes for April 16th. Representative Jordan.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. There are a few grammatical style changes that I know we are going to be making, so I would move their approval.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. With that, Representative...
Oh, and Madam Chair, I believe Caitlin Snyder's name is misspelled. There should be an E at the end of Lynn.
Perfect. Thank you. With that, members, Representative Jordan moves the minutes for April 16th. Are there any other questions? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed say no. Minutes for April 16th are adopted. With that, members, I am going to hand the gavel over to Vice Chair Clardy so we can, sorry, I'm just getting my tablet right here so that we can proceed to the bill.
Good morning. Chair Joachim, would you like to move House File 5237 before the committee with the intention to be referred to Tax Committee?
Yes, I would. Yes, I would. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Would you like to move the DE2 amendment?
Yes, Chair Clardy, I would like to move the DE2 amendment before the committee.
Great. So the DE2 is before us, and we'll take up the amendment to the DE2 next. Chair Joachim, would you like to move the A24-0303 amendment?
Yes, I would like to move the A24-0303 amendment.
Will you please explain the A24-0303 amendment?
Yes, I would. Members, this is an author's amendment. I would like to draw your attention to the languages on line 2.8 to 2.13. This language was requested by DHS regarding the student-teacher stipend of the bill. It is so that the stipend is not utilized as income or assets when determining medical assistance eligibility, since we are just paying everybody that's student-teaching that. The changes on lines 2.23 and 2.24 were requested by the stakeholders that have worked on third-party billing language to clarify the definition of practitioner and define diagnostic condition. And I'm happy to say that MDE, DHS, and the stakeholders finally have peace in the valley, and we're going to get this done. And the rest of this amendment is technical or grammatical changes in nature. I would like to move the amendment labeled A24-0303 and ask for your support.
Any questions on the A24-0303 amendment? I guess. Lead Creesha.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate you looking at me with that look out of the corner of your eye, like, what am I up to? So I read through the technical amendment, and I just have to say, once again, we're fast and furious with grammar and punctuation. We have 2.5 pages of audaciousness, brazen with presumptuous around the proper tense and use. I'd like a roll call. No, I'm just kidding. I think the amendment's fine.
Any other comments?
You would have supported me, Representative Jordan.
So Chair Joachim renews her motion to adopt the A24-0303 amendment. And those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? So the motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. So we're now finished with the amendments to the DE2, and we will now take up the DE2 as amended. This is not the final motion to move the bill out of the committee. Chair Joachim renews her motion that the DE2 amendment is amended to be adopted. And now the clerk will take the roll.
Okay.
Whoops. I'm sorry. Oh, let me skip that one. So all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, so the motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Lee, appreciate you kind of threw me on that one. Are there any questions on House File 5237 as amended? Chair Youakim, do you have any final words on the bill? I'm sorry, okay.
Actually, Chair Clardy, if we can, I think if members, this is the time for you to make comments or right. have questions. So just to make that clear.
Okay. Lee Krisha.
Thank you. And I'll go to the end, but I'm as Representative and Chair Youakim said, I'm sure there's members that want to make comments on the bill. So I'll go to the end.
Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate it. And thank you, this committee. You know, it's been a joy to work with everybody, and I know we still have a little more work to come on the floor and so on, but I just want to say some things about this bill, mostly related to a passion of mine. And so I'm a note taker. I actually spent most of my last evening just contemplating this whole subject. And because reading, I want to talk about reading for a minute. And obviously, as an education committee, that's important to all of us. But reading is a passion of mine. When I was a first grade teacher, that was my favorite subject to teach. I loved to get kids excited about reading, bring them to the library, teach them, get them skills that would allow them to be proficient readers. Literacy is the most important subject in school, and I don't think any of us would argue that. Because if you can't read, you can't master any other subject, from math to science to history, whatever. And we have a problem, and I don't think we'd argue that either. We have, at this point, less than half of the students in our state can read proficiently. Overall, it's 49.9%. Third graders are at 47%. So those third graders last year, at 47%, entered kindergarten when Governor Walz entered office. So I believe the governor actually owns these results for these third graders. They entered school when he entered office. His educational strategies have failed them. And sadly, if a provision in the education policy bill goes through, we're not going to know how these current third graders are doing with their test scores until December. That's a full 8 months after these kids take that test. That's not a good thing. And by the way, it's 2 months after the election. I've heard a lot of voices blaming COVID for these low scores, the pandemic. But reading scores have been on the downward trend for years. Listen to this 2013 headline that was in national news. 2013, Minnesota reading scores plummet in Common Core assessments. And it goes on, the article goes on to list, you know, in 2012, 76% of students were proficient at reading. 2013, it was 58%. The greatest drop was third graders, who went from 80% to 57%. This has been a problem for years. Governor Dayton entered office in 2011. We've been under Democrat leadership since then. And I'm not a big partisan person, and it makes me uncomfortable to say these things even, but it's blatantly clear that the Democrat education strategies are not working. I'm not going after any of you. It's the strategies, they're not working. When I was a teacher and I was teaching reading, if I was using strategies and I wasn't getting the growth that should have been there, I stopped those strategies and tried something different. So we need to do this for our children. It's more than just not working. Those strategies are actually hurting kids. So I want to say, do you not see the seriousness of this issue? Because it is hugely serious. We have about 1 million school-aged children in our state. That means that we have over 500,000 children who cannot read proficiently. This is huge. As I said on the floor last week with Ed Policy, it's screaming red alert. And my heart breaks for these kids who are unable to read well, because reading, proficient reading, opens doors. It opens doors of opportunity. It's a great equalizer. And I think, what kind of pathway in life do these reading scores and this ability to read put this half million, and this is not proper grammar, but half million students on? It puts them on a path of failure and a path of dependency. So yesterday in committee, we heard a couple testifiers say that the curriculum programs that Kerry has placed on the approved curriculum list, they said that they're somehow racially insensitive because these programs have too many authors and illustrators who are white. And they said that's racially insensitive. But I'll tell you what racially insensitive is. It's when kids can't read. That's racially insensitive. Representative Edelson, I'm going to advocate for your READ Act right now, because I'm guessing that you wanted and needed a lot more funding that you got that you got last year. You got $770 million, I believe it was. Well, I'm thinking you probably should have joined our Republican team, because we would have put $250 million on that. So the majority's education bill last year came nowhere near the amount of dollars needed to fund this reading crisis. It can be fixed with the application of science of reading. This year, the education majority is putting a little bit more onto it, $37 million. That's not enough. I feel like, again, we're failing our kids with this. The other issue is what government mandates it should fund, and it's not funding this mandate appropriately. We had an $18 billion surplus last year. That's when we should have addressed this. My Democrat colleagues spent the $18 billion, and the READ Act got $70 million. What does that say to the over half million kids who are caught up in these failed reading strategies that we need to change immediately? And I know Representative Edelson feels that same way, because she has this bill. So here's some of the priorities that I saw last year with the $18 million surplus. Sorry, I'm getting this wrong here, but $18 billion surplus. And the READ Act got $70 million. $194 million for a high-speed train to Duluth. $135 million so that adults who are school employees can stay home on unemployment for the summer. We should have spent that money and had those adults stay in school and help tutor those kids who are behind in reading, or at least read to them. That helps. We spent $120 million last year, that $18 billion surplus, to legalize pot in this state. That's not the priority I want to see. I mean, maybe when those kids turn 21, they can smoke some pot to soothe their lack of ability to read, but that's not a good thing. And that might sound flippant. I don't want to be flippant here, because I'm serious. I'm dead serious. Teachers, administrators, school board members, parents, they're crying out about this reading crisis. And I don't believe we have appropriately prioritized this in this committee. As a Republican and our Republican team here, we want to fund this well. We want to tighten it up so that the bogus reading strategies that are being used at this time in many schools leave, because we need to get the science of reading applied in every school. So I'll just close by saying, I sure wish that this $43 million target, actually, I wish we would take it out of current funds, because we have plenty we could pull it from without spending additional money. But if we're going to spend that $43 million target, then let's spend it in the entirety on this READ Act. And then take the extra $50 million that's been repurposed for the governor's VPK program, the expansion, and put that towards this reading crisis too. Because our teachers deserve that funding to get them trained, get them stipends, all the things they need. the schools deserve that funding so they can change over their curriculum appropriately and have enough funding to do that. And most of all, those 500,000 kids need it so that they can learn to read proficiently and open doors of opportunity. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. Representative Sensenmura.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chair Joachim, for bringing this bill. You know, I really stand by this bill. Two provisions that I really care about that are in it are related to student attendance. I know we had lots of discussions this year about the really appalling trend that we are seeing in student attendance, particularly coming out of the pandemic, chronic absenteeism, which means that students who are missing 10 days or more of school a year is rapidly rising. It's rising across the state. It's rising in my district. And so I really believe in the demonstration project and the funds that we are devoting towards that. I know that Minneapolis has seen some success with the strategies that, they are using, and these funds will help them continue those strategies and hopefully, you know, be able to pass those strategies along to districts across the state. Additionally, the Minnesota Youth Council, which was created in statute a number of years ago as a way to bring more youth voice into the legislative process. You know, I see more and more, and I think this is really positive, that we are putting into bills that particularly have to do with young people and will affect young people, that the Minnesota Youth Council needs to be at the table for those discussions, needs to be conferred and consulted about those. I think that's really important, but then we also need to make sure that we are dedicating funding to ensure that the council has the resources to be able to support youth in that work. So thank you for including that. I hope that in future years we can get that included into the base so we can get ongoing funding for that. I do just want to step back and say, you know, I appreciate all of the work that Chair Joachim and leadership did to bump up the target that we have for our education budget in this supplemental year. I just do have to take a moment, though, and talk about where my district is at, right? And you know, two things are happening at the same time. One is that we did invest tremendously in education last year. We invested more than we had invested in 20 years. And we are trying to make up for years of what I believe was severe underinvestment. And we really feel that in my district. At the same time, 4 years of pandemic funding is running out this year. That's something, you know, we all know districts knew was going to happen. And, you know, I think it is worth talking about the decisions that districts made, right, that I think are making this moment particularly hard, where we are really, really feeling these cuts. But, you know, they use them to fill gaps, right? And now those gaps are left open. And in Minneapolis, we're dealing with a $110 million budget cut. And every single day I have students, I have parents who are coming to me and saying, I see that you have money at the state. Why can't you just give us that money? And we know that it's more complicated, right? I have to step back and say we're seeing gaps because these pandemic funds are running out across the state. It's not just Minneapolis. But I would just be remiss if I didn't talk about, you know, the ongoing needs that I know my district is seeing. And every single story is heartbreaking, right? Fifth grade band, right? This is the reason my kid comes to school. This is the one adult in the building that my kid has really connected with. You know, talking about language classes that are going to need to go, talking about, you know, culturally relevant classes that are going to need to go, arts programs, which, you know, brought a family to a school that are going to be cut. And just, you know, I think a continued concern that we are really not investing in our schools the way that we need to. So thank you for this bill. Thanks for the work of this committee for plugging a little bit of the holes that we see. And I, you know, I'm committed to doing the work in future years to really try to advocate for really deep investment in our schools, because I think that's what is needed right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sensenmura. Representative Anderson.
Thank you. I'll be fairly brief. We've talked a lot about the historic funding that we put into place last year, and there's a little more this year, but what's missing is there's zero mandate relief in this bill. Not only is there no relief, there's more mandates. I think there's five or more new mandates that have been put on our schools. And at some point, you know, we are not the experts. The experts are the professionals within the K-12 education system. It's our superintendents, it's our school boards, it's our teachers, They're the experts, and they know what the problems are. And we did our job in providing a historic funding for K to 12, but then we really killed that by telling them exactly how they have to spend it and mandating new things over and above. And so now our schools' hands are tied, and the funding, it doesn't help. It's not helping. And so we have budget cuts across, I think, almost every school district because of it. So we just sort of ruined what we tried to do by putting extra money, significant dollars, into funding. And I was hoping that this year we would change that. I was hoping this year we would pull back some of these mandates and let the schools do what they do best. But that's not what's in this bill. And so I'm sad. I feel for our schools. I feel for our kids that we're not helping them. In fact, I think we're harming them. And this is just more of what's been happening. So I'm, you know, maybe next year things will change. But until then, I hope that our districts can do what they can to get the test scores. I hope these extra dollars in the READ Act, which should be, in my mind, many times more than what is put in here. But I hope that that will help, because Minnesota used to have one of the best K to 12 test scores and education systems in the country, and we don't anymore. And it's really sad. It's really sad. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Knutson.
Thank you, Madam, thank you, Chair. So I guess we're at a crisis in our schools right now. You know, our reading yesterday, I believe it was Commissioner Jett, called these times the Great Recovery. Since the Walz administration began in 2019, our reading proficiency is down 16%. Our math proficiency is down 17%. And our science proficiency is down 23%. Attendance. Consistent attendance is at 69%. We have some major problems in our educational system. And I believe this bill, it starts to address some of this, but it just falls short. A really important part of education to me is parents. Empowering our parents empowers our students. And we're not doing that with this bill. Local control is almost always best. Our school boards are comprised of retired teachers from our communities, parents from our communities, grandparents from our communities. They know the needs of their children best. And now we're going to take away their ability to set their health curriculum. We are telling them that we think that the state knows best. The state doesn't know best. The state doesn't know all of those children. We don't know all of those children in all of those districts. But you know who does? The school board and the parents. They know their children. We're taking that away. Decisions that are made farthest from the parent are the least effective. And as far as the READ Act, I'm so glad that we're moving in that direction. That's great. But you know what? What about that generation that we're missing right now? What about this generation of kids that don't know how to read? How are we ever going to catch them up? They're lost. They're lost forever. For too long, we have been failing our kids. We've been failing our schools, and we're failing our students. And though there are some great efforts in this, it falls short. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Knutson. Representative West.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I actually will start with a question to make sure I'm on the same page. But looking through the bill, I did a little Control F search for anything related to the Inspector General because he was here testifying that he needed additional authority, well, clarified authority. And is there anything in this bill dealing with the Office of the Inspector General?
Chair Joachim.
Representative West, thank you for coming today and asking about that. They have been working hard at the Department of Education to figure out what that would look like. They have reached out to all the different departments and started crafting a bill. Unfortunately, they didn't get anything to us until Tuesday. I did drop that bill. I don't know if you saw that. And it has to go through multiple committees because it does have to deal with Chapter 13 law and sharing information and subpoenas. And we would hate to have it miss or skip a committee, especially I can imagine Representative Scott wouldn't be very happy if we talked about data without her. So that is being worked on. And my hope is that it comes out this summer after having a lot more conversation, that we can get that done right away next year and look at it. We also just stood up the office and they just hired somebody. So they're getting settled in now. We also made a lot of different improvements to the state grant management system and investments in that, as well as standing up the Inspector General Office for the first time in MDE. So I think we're on the right track to deal with this moving forward, and we'll continue to have it be a work in progress. And I really appreciate you asking those questions because you helped spur that on.
Representative Wes, follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a shame that it's taking so long because he was here in one of our first meetings during the Education Committee and clearly laid out what his issues are. I understand sharing data between departments and they're very territorial over at the executive branch is something that needs to be vetted. However, that was the implication, which is what he was implying when he testified, that he's supposed to have the authority to collect this information if he's expected to do any serious work. And maybe it's been taken so seriously that nothing gets done, but it's very concerning that it's not in this bill, considering there have been months to work on it. We need to ensure that taxpayer dollars are spent wisely, because we've seen $250 million wasted in the Feeding Our Futures fraud. It's a serious problem when you think, hey, if we had that $250 million, maybe we wouldn't have a $43 million target. Maybe we could give some relief to these school districts on this 65 plus mandates, because that's a lot of money. And delaying that is concerning because there was a 40% increase in state spending last year, 40%. So an extra $18-20 billion is flowing through the system. A lot of that is grants, and sure, little things around the edges were done on that, but we know that these funds get spent improperly and get sent to people who maybe should not receive these funds, and we don't have the tools in state government to properly deal with this. It's become abundantly clear. Even just if you look at the Feeding Our Future frauds, they claim to feed 50,000 students from an apartment building. I mean, simple Google Maps search would have prevented that. So when you look at not dealing with that in this bill and kicking it down the road and not taking it taking it as seriously as it needs to be taken, because, I mean, $250 million. We're spending $43 million in this bill. Imagine what we could do with that. So I very much hope that bill does see the light of day. I don't see why it would need to wait. It is something that's important. I think $250 million is important. Who knows what else is out there? And just because, oh, we're past deadline, doesn't mean it can't be done. Anything can be done in this legislature if we choose to do it. So the Rules Committee can make sure it moves through the committees that it needs to move through. I guarantee you, Peggy Scott would love to come in. Representative Scott would love to come in any day of the week and to those committees and vet the bill to ensure that it is done properly. But not having anything related to the Office of Inspector General in this bill, when we heard about it months in advance, seems to be a oversight, to say the least, and with a genuine lack of seriousness, because we need this money to help our students become proficient again. Our state used to be a champion in education, and we have severely lagged behind. I mean, we've seen that nationwide, but Minnesota has always been excellent, and now our students are really underachieving. And I hope that we can move that through the process this year. I would happily support the bill. I haven't read through it yet, but if it does, if the Inspector General says it gives him what he needs to do his job, because he explicitly said when I asked him in committee, frankly, no, when I asked if he had the tools to do his job, if it gives him the tools to do his job, we should get it through the process. And we can do it properly. We still have plenty of time. There's weeks left in session. We can do a couple committee meetings, because you're talking about a sincerely huge amount of money. And our kids need that support. Taxpayers expect that responsibility. And I believe there was enough time to come up with something. You know, I did talk to the department on this particular bill, and they were collaborative, and they mentioned they were working on something. And I was hoping, you know, I wanted something to happen, genuinely. I didn't want to come in here with my crazy, this is what we need to do, partisan nonsense. I wanted something to happen. We all wanted something to happen. Taxpayers expect us to work together to be responsible with our money. And seeing that it didn't come to fruition, it's like, well, talk about classic slow-moving government when it comes to accountability of the funds we spend. And we can't let that be the norm. We can easily do better. It just takes a deliberate effort. And we can do that deliberate effort by ensuring your bill moves through the process. If it does what the Inspector General needs, what he said he needs, I'm all about it. Let's make it happen. I guarantee you nobody will nobody will complain. But nobody on our side of the aisle will complain about coming in whenever you need to do those hearings to get that bill vetted, get it through the process, and ensure that the Inspector General can do his job. Because right now, he frankly said he couldn't. So what's the point of having a department that is non-functional for another several months until the next session? It's something that is urgently needed, because we cannot afford to lose hundreds of millions of taxpayer dollars to fraudulent actors for no apparent reason, just because we didn't want to move it through the process, even though we can't. There is nothing stopping us now that we have language. So I'm glad to hear that there is language. So let's make it happen. It can happen. It should be in the bill today. We should, but we can make it happen after the bill today. It doesn't have to be in here. And I think taxpayers expect us to be more responsible with the money, especially when we're spending it like drunken sailors. So I'm glad to hear there's a bill. I wish it was included within this bill, and we need to do that. There is no excuse for, oh, we just don't have the time, especially now that we have the language. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative West. Chair Youakim.
Yes, thank you. First, I'd suggest you read the bill. It's pretty far-reaching, and there will be lots of discussions about that, as there has been in other bills we've been passing through this session where folks had angst about departments being able to talk to each other. It does have a lot of Chapter 13 laws, and we have spent money. We spent money last year that some people might have wanted to see to go to the READ Act to set up the Office of Inspector General. We did spend money in state government to set up the oversight grants management at the state level in MMB, and we're continuing to look at doing that as well. As you note in our bill, we have very few grants. We have two. One is for a statutorily required group in our states. We are moving towards looking at maybe no legislatively appropriated grants, or looking at something like the OJP program in the Department of Public Safety, so they're all competitive. I share your thought about wanting the oversight on our money, because what we put into our schools creates our future, and what we put into early childhood gets those kids ready for school, and it is equally as important to me. But what's equally as important to me is that the process is looked at, because it does give broad subpoena power. They already can get that data. They just have to go to the courts. They already can talk to each other between the departments, but there has to be a process, so that folks that are doing good work in our grants and good works in our nonprofits aren't caught up into something and have their whole place shut down. So it does need vetting, and we are more than happy to do that. I think it will take more than a few committee hearings, and we have, like I said, we have done a lot to stand up. And just as a reminder, too, that federal money that was sent to us was to was not going to go into our coffers if we caught that. That couldn't have gone into the READ Act. That couldn't have gone into our schools. So just wanted to make sure that was clear as well. And I look forward to working with Representative West on this issue and maybe even working on through the summer with it too. But I'd suggest that you read the language first and maybe have some discussions with your colleagues, and we can see if we can move this through the process. But I doubt that could happen that fast in this place. So thank you, Madam Chair. Let's go on to some other folks to speak to.
Thanks, Chair Joachim. Representative Lawrence.
Well, good morning. Thank you, Vice Chair Clardy. This is my first time speaking in a committee, and so day number 9 for me, I thought I would like to speak on behalf of this bill as well. So thank you for the opportunity. Day 9 in, and I've had a chance to learn a lot. I'm glad that I've been a part of the hearings of the committee here, and give me a little bit of brief background on the bill that's before us today. I've got to hear some testimony, listen to some amendments, and then the review was extremely helpful to me as a new individual to this committee. And so in addition to that, I also have a student that is still in the public school process. And so these bills hit me at home as well. There's a couple things, and I figured I better stick to what I know, right? Some things that I know. And so this might sound a little, as some others have heard at this point in time, but the things that I know at this point in time, because I've been involved in schools, I have a student in school, my wife and I have been very active in our community on that level. And one, we have excellent teachers. We have excellent teachers that have been trained to educate students. We have great superintendents that are dedicated to the administration and management of our districts. We have elected school board members. Elected school board members that have the conviction to lead for their community, lead for what's best in their community, lead what's best for their school district. We have parents, I being one, passionate about their students, but not only their students, but their students' friends, the other students in the classroom atmosphere, the teachers that are in the community teaching. They're passionate about our school system. They serve as coaches. They assist in classrooms. They serve in booster clubs. They are involved individuals that care about the school systems that their children and other children are a part of. All local involved people, people that are involved on a local level, committed to the community, dedicated to the success of their schools. The other thing I know that last, and I wasn't here, so I'm just going to, but on the last session, over 65 mandates were passed. And I know there's ones talked here, but that's the number. I didn't count them all, but that's the number that's been said, so I'm not going to claim to count them. But there's been a lot of mandates that were passed that make it difficult on those local individuals to do their job, to do their role, to perform at their utmost. I look at it as a form of micromanaging from us as representatives. It's a form of micromanaging in a community where people were hired, employed, trained to serve. They know what they're doing. They're passionate about what they're doing. And we hinder them by mandates like this from being effective to complete the role that they've done. My hope is that as this bill passes to the House, as it meets a counterpart in the Senate, that we could continue to work to alleviate, to relieve the mandates that were passed, to allow the individuals on the local level to be effective in what they've been trained to do, to train our students, to educate our students in the subjects that they're assigned to. And so with that, I just had a couple brief comments. Wanted to at least share some thoughts on this. I know I'm coming late to the game, but as a parent, as an individual that does represent a district, as someone that's been involved in this, that's an aspect that's challenging for our school districts, for our teachers, for our school boards, for our superintendents, and then it comes down to our students as well. All people that have a major role in our future generations. And so my request is that as we move forward, we work together to find ways to relieve our districts of those mandates. Thank you.
Thank you, and welcome to your first speech. We will go on to Representative Ream.
you, Chair, and thank you, Chair Joachim, for this bill. I know it's been a lot of work, and I really appreciate all the people here at the table who have been passionately working on behalf of the students in our schools. You know, I think we're here for a reason. We believe in education, and we want to do the best for our students and for our kids. And I just wanted to comment, too, on Representative Bennett. She said, you know, reading is so important, it's foundational. I totally agree. I loved to read when I was a kid. I went to the library quite often. I'm really glad that we funded libraries. I know you and I both have a real passion for libraries and reading, and yes, we need to do more to get our kids to the reading level that they need to be at. And yes, a lot of kids do need to improve their reading skills. So with this bill, though, we have been working on that. We haven't ignored it. But it's an ongoing process. We can't make up for 20 years of underfunding in one session. And so, you know, and I don't like to go partisan either, but I will say, you know, when you're saying it's been a problem for years, I would say, yeah, it has been. And, you know, it goes way back to, you know, when Governor Pawlenty changed the funding for our schools. And that's been a huge issue. So for 20 years, we really haven't been able to fund the schools in the way that we really need to. So I wanted to put that out there. Also, you know, if the Democratic strategy isn't working, I would say, you know, I'd like to see the evidence of that, because I would say that if you look at GOP-led states, I would say the statistics would prove that states where you actually fund education that are Democrat-led probably have much higher test scores. So, and then the READ Act. So I heard from people in my district that the READ Act was the most important thing that they wanted us to focus on this year, and we've done that. We've put, you know, the bulk of our money into the READ Act. Reading is, you know, incredibly important, so I'm glad we did that. We've helped to fund the educators who are coming up. You know, we'll be teaching our kids in the years to come. And, you know, this has been a historical session for all of us. And I think I'd like to think we're all here because we really believe in education. We really believe in making sure that our kids come to school fed, and, you know, and people, you know, I think we have to also put a little shout out to Representative Jordan, who passed the universal school lunches, because that will also help our kids to read. Will also help our kids learn math. You know, you can't read when you're sitting at a desk with an empty stomach. So lastly, you know, I just don't think it's a time to point fingers. I think it's a time to roll up our sleeves. And I know, like I said, I think we're all working toward that. And I also want to say, you know, that the COVID pandemic has impacted our schools. It's not the only reason why reading scores have gone down, but it certainly has impacted our kids, and I think we do need to look into that in the years to come, study, you know, what went right, what went wrong. You know, over 5,000 caregivers died here in Minnesota. And that impacts our kids when you don't have a parent around to help you get to school. So anyway, I appreciate being on this team, and I look forward to working with everyone in the months to come. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Rehm. Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. As I've been talking to people in my district, you know, there's just been so much concern. I went to most of the school board meetings, spoke to superintendents, spoke to school board members, teachers, and over and over, you know, what I heard from my district is that they didn't listen, that we did not listen here in St. Paul to what they needed. And so, yes, they did need funding. And last year, if we could just take you all back, you know, what did we see in the headlines, right? $2.2 billion, record amount of funding went to public education, right? And so we're making this claim. And that was true. That headline was true. $2.2 billion record funding went to public education. So then how today do we see in the headlines school districts, $300 million deficit, cutting teachers, teacher contracts not being settled? And that is also true. So in Minnesota, we're battling two truths. One, that the majority party likes to claim that they gave record funding to our public schools. That's true. And yet, you tied them up with over 65 new mandates. So as you like to say right now, we cannot fix, because we know your political talking point. We've heard it over and over. So I'm just going to say it. We cannot fix 20 years of underfunding in one session. Do you hear yourself? Are you that tone deaf? You gave record funding with equal amount of mandates that our schools are worse off today than they were 1 year ago. And so you cannot say with an honest face, but you will try, and probably the media will run with it, that we cannot fix 20 years of underfunding our schools in one session. You absolutely could have. And instead, your priorities were on the mandates to force the schools to do things that followed your agenda, not to do what the teachers needed, not to do what the superintendents needed. You crippled them. You literally crippled them. You gave them record funding with equal number of mandates. That's the truth. So will the media run the truth? Will the media run the truth? Because our schools are suffering. Our school board members are scrambling, trying to figure out things like teacher contracts, teacher pay. Our children are suffering, with 50% of them not able to read at grade level. And it is disingenuous to Minnesotans to continue to say we cannot fix 20 years of underfunding in one session. Because you had the money, you showed your priorities, and it wasn't for funding schools.
Thank you, Representative Altendorf. Chair Joachim.
No worries. I just wanted to take note that we have a lot of amazing visitors and students here in the audience. And it was literacy. Go ahead, Representative. Oh, I can't hear you.
Representative Ellison.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's Literacy Day on the Hill, so all of the students here are in support of literacy.
Thank you. Chair Joachim.
Chair Joachim. Chair Clardy, I just want to say what an appropriate moment to come into the room when we are just talking about spending money on the READ Act and how important literacy is for our students. So I just want to thank them for being here today. And we're trying our best to roll up our sleeves and work together and move forward to get your schools funded. So thank you.
Wonderful. Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so, you know, I've heard things here today like, a child is lost, blame about whose fault it was that students are behind. And I do want to welcome the students. It's so good to see you guys from over at the Capitol. I was me on the podium talking to you. And I talked about, students in this room, I talked about when I was in third grade, I was held back in third grade because I couldn't read. And that's where, when I was first elected here, which I talked to the students here that are watching us today, and students are watching that are in this room, but students are watching us outside of this room too. And we have to do better. I mean, I hear my colleagues on the other side of the aisle talk about the READ Act, but none of you have signed on. None of you have co-authored. And I genuinely don't want this to be partisan. I genuinely don't. And you know it. You know I don't. But for some reason, the nature of us blaming each other becomes about who's going to win an election. And it shouldn't be. It should be when we come into this building, we should disarm some of our partisanship and do our work. That's what the READ Act is, because I'll tell you, the third grader that was held back in third grade, do you think I cared who was sitting in this building? I don't. I did it. And the kids right here, they do not care. They just want us to do our work. And so I, again, will just extend. I appreciate the READ Act comments, and it has been a journey, and I would really, you just have to go on to our authors and add your name. I would be most appreciated, because I will tell you, we have $37 million going out directly, and I moved some money around so that we could untie it for curriculums, because districts like yours, Santa Maria, they are hurting. Actually, all of our districts are hurting. Representative Ream, your district is going to get $369,000, and that's just from the $35 million, because her district did advocate. And I've heard from your districts as well. Representative Bennett, Albert Lee, will get $133,000. That's just out of the curriculum funds. They're going to get it this summer because our districts need it. Minneapolis is going to get $2.4 million that they were not going to get until a year from now. Rosemont, Apple Valley, $1.1 million. Anoka, where was it? It was several million. It's somewhere on here. So I guess my point is I genuinely do want to work across the aisle. I always have. We might have our floor debates and it might get fun. But the reality is we have work to do. I have signed on to Republican bills. 100%. I sat with Tony Albright before he left this legislature, and we co-presented bills. It has gotten so partisan, and we sit over there and we blame. Enough is enough. Sign on to the bill if you want to say that you support it, because at the end of the day, you should. And shame on you if you don't.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to say, just to welcome the kids that are in the room, and we can get passionate and fired up. And we can have disagreements, and that's the reality of, we have different perspectives. But in order to hear different perspectives, we have to sit down behind, you know, in our offices and have real honest conversations. And, you know, that's what I appreciate about Representative Keeler and the attendance bill that she and I have been working on. We, at this table, at Education Policy, we had a difference of perspective on how to address attendance and truancy. We had a conversation. And the end product, we had a conversation in her office about what we could do collaboratively. So I would 100% agree with you, Representative Edelson, that we have a shared vested interest in literacy, and we want to work collaboratively, but it's a two-way street. I would just say that. Like, you have to take some of our ideas and work with us. And I shared a ton of information with you, but it has to be reciprocated back and forth. So with that, I'll go back to Chair Youakim and just say thank you, Chair Youakim, for your leadership through the committee members and healthy discussions. Like, we need to have healthy disagreements and discussions and different perspectives. And I want to go back and just really bigger picture. Over the summer, I sat in my office and at school, and I had to actually implement the stuff that we passed. Some of it was really good. We have to give credit where credit is due. Really good things, but the amount of mandates, and, you know, that were passed, 65 mandates at least passed on schools, what that tells schools, whether it's a teacher, a principal, a superintendent, is we here know better than you do on how to manage your school. We don't. And I've talked about this a lot. The needs of St. Peter are different than the needs of St. Paul. I've heard, well, the mandates, their accountability for taxpayer dollars. When Representative West just brought up the Office of Inspector General, I was floored that we heard testimony in February and they just got information on Tuesday? Do your job. It's that simple. It's that type of stuff. Why, when a principal is sitting in their office and they hear that, they're like, are you kidding me? What are we doing? That's the department. And I could go on and on and on over my career working with the department of where we're held to a standard, but they're not. That's unacceptable. And that's our job to hold them accountable. We've talked about of historic funding, and I would agree. But it's all about choices on how you spend that money. It's no different than our own personal budgets. And I think the thing that I heard over, whether it was with teachers, principals, superintendents, parents, kids, is just please go back and fix it. Just have some humility and go back and fix it. And Representative Edelson brought a great example of how we can do that with the shifting of money earlier. That just shows that we can do that. And we didn't do that. And I've heard us talk about let's roll up our sleeves and fix it. That's committee work. Like, that should have been the process. We're now debating the bill in front of us. Like, the committee work is done. So we're going to have amendments and discussion on the floor, but if we were going to roll up our sleeves and fix things, that should have started in February when we came. Okay, and I appreciate those of you that have reached across the aisle and worked on different things. Representative Sensenmura, we had a conversation in your office. You invited me. You initiated and scheduled that meeting. So thank you for doing that. But the question is just very simple to me. And schools across the state are asking this question. Are we better off right now? And I could go down the list and I could talk about budget cuts happening and all of that. I'm not going to do that. But I would just ask us to really think, are we better off right now? Is our system better off right now than 2 years ago? So we've infused a ton of money into it, but is our system better off? Because these kids, they're the ones impacted. Our staff, they're the ones impacted. So if we want to roll up our sleeves and fix some things, I've got a whole bunch of ideas, a bunch of bills that were offered, and we're here to help. We're here to address things. So with that, Madam Chair, thank you. Thank you, Chair Joachim. And I'm going to end with this. We had principals here yesterday, and I had the opportunity to go chat with them. And one of them just said, you know, Ben, I'm just tired of the partisanship. Mm-hmm. I'm tired of it. But it's a two-way street. All right? It's a two-way street. Because when a principal sits in their desk, they're not a Republican or a Democrat. When a teacher is in front of class, they're not a Republican or a Democrat. When Representative Hill or I are in our schools, we're not Republicans or Democrats. We're educators. Let's have the respect of our educators and trust them to do their job and not mandate what is expected of them. That's not taxpayer accountability. That's telling them how to do their job, and we shouldn't be doing that.
Thank you, Representative Bakeberg. Representative Renick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Chair Joachim, for this bill. And I would like to answer the question that you just asked, Representative Bakeberg. I am a parent of three children. I have a second grader, a sixth grader, and an eighth grader. I have a child with dyslexia. And I can tell you that my child today is doing better in school because of the READ Act than he was 2 years ago. It also includes outside tutoring, but the school district has changed their direction, which I appreciate. That is not new. It didn't start in 2019. I will give Janine Hudson so much credit for coming before our school board starting back in 2017 to raise the flags. So the READ Act is necessary. It's needed. I couldn't agree more that we need more funding. I appreciate that. That seems to be something that we can agree on. I agree that this, you know, budget falls short, that it's sad as a parent. It is sad when your child leaves first grade and they can't say the sounds and the letters of the alphabet. And I am in one of the best school districts. So could we do more? Absolutely. However, there are some constraints. I guess, you know, we don't have an unlimited budget. And I wasn't here last year, so I didn't get to decide how the money was spent. I am excited. There's some things in this bill that I am really excited about, such as addressing the compensatory aid revenue issue, which I know is a big concern in my school districts. Another piece that nobody's mentioned yet, but I'm super excited about, is the Medicaid third-party billing, because if you can get that right and get that done, you can bring in dollars to your school district. A great example is Minnetonka. Go ask them how much they're making on their third-party reimbursement. The attendance pilot, attendance and absenteeism is an issue. I really appreciate that there's a pilot program in the variety of districts that have been agreed to be involved. I think that will be exciting to hear about. The health standards, of course, as somebody who deals in health in my day job with schools, it's setting a framework for schools to work from. It's not dictating exactly what has to happen, but putting some guardrails in place. And then another little piece that I find very interesting is the paraprofessional pay and training. We've heard from paraprofessionals that oftentimes they get sent to training that isn't really relevant to their job. So this, I think, is a good piece of the bill as well. And of course, you know, I would be remiss without saying how, you know, I'm maybe a little salty that we haven't addressed the issue between out facilities and the rest of the school districts. And I know if we change the levy authority, we got to sandpaper it off somewhere else. But you'll hear from me on that probably every time. So thank you. It's a good bill.
Thank you, Representative Vernig. We're moving to Chair Pryor.
All right. You had to call me now after that great summary of the whole speech. thank you, Representative Vernig. I think you really summed up where we stand today at this moment in time and what we can do today at this moment in time. When you sit here and you listen to all these comments, so many emotions go through my mind. I feel them in my stomach mostly. There's a quivering in there, and it means engagement and also childhood memories. And I just kind of throw it out there. I've said it once before, but Representative Edelson, you know, they did not hold me back in the third grade, but starting in the first grade, it's like I was one of those kids that was not getting it. And I, you know, you're supposed to do these assignments, and I could never finish them because I was struggling. And I have a form of dyslexia. And so learning to read for other kids, and I was a pretty smart kid. But I was always the one that never could finish their assignments. And I was ignored because I was quiet. I seemed to be well behaved. I didn't come to school hungry. I didn't act out in class, and I was ignored. I learned to read, and I'm pretty good at it. I understand the feeling because I had that feeling. And I know that last year and the continuation of the work this year, we're doing something about all the kids. We're trying to get all the kids now moving forward. And because one of the things that's in the READ Act is this idea of accountability mandates to schools and teachers so that you're keeping track of all the kids, the ones that are quiet and behaved and go home at the end of the day and nobody notices what they're not learning. We're watching out for them, too, as well as the kids that are so frustrated they can't stay in the classroom. We're watching out for those kids, too.
We're going to start talking about mandates, and we're going to talk about the READ Act every single time. We had the courage not to just to throw some money at it, but to do a comprehensive mandate on schools to say all of our kids are going to learn how to read. And we will continue to keep that sense of responsibility to our kids and our students. We are making life hard for principals. I know it. I know it. We're making it really hard because it's been really hard for our kids. Mm-hmm. And it's like when you have problems, you say, who's responsible for solving them? You know, who bears the cost? And we're saying our superintendents, they're the ones that we're going to turn to, that we're requiring more of. Our principals, they're the ones we're turning to, and we're requiring more of them because our kids need it. And that's what we're here for. And because you know me, and you know that I believe that sincerely, and I'm not giving you a talking point. I'm not up for re-election, so I don't need my speech on the floor or in my committee. I'm just saying this now because I'm a parent and a grandparent, and I love our state. So we're going to vote for this bill in front of us, and I'm going to ask for a roll call vote on this bill in front of us so that we say this bill in front of us, not 20 years ago, but this bill in front of us, that funds the READ Act, that funds absenteeism, that tries to address the teacher shortage by giving stipends for student teachers, for the all these things that Bianca just said, is the bill in front of us, and we'll do a roll call vote. Thank you, members. Thank you, Chair Joaquin.
Thank you, Chair Pryor, and we will do a roll call, but before we have Lee Trisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So let me get through my housekeeping first. First of all, I need to thank the nonpartisan staff. Thank you for all your time, your efforts, and I apologize for the lack of sleep. To the DFL research and staff and committee leads, you have my respect as always. Nice work over there. Sometimes too nice. To the members, thank you for all the discussions. Everybody that sits in this room has had honest conversations, and those come from a place where you've heard people, you're bringing forth their ideas and their thoughts, their passions and frustrations. We're doing what we were called to do down here, so thank you for that. Representative Clardy, thank you as the vice chair. You've done a nice job. I'm glad to know that we share an interest in vehicles, and someday maybe we can drive around in a big truck together. So, and Chair Joaquin, thank you for the journey. Thank you for the conversations. We've always been respectful, and I think that has come to the committee as well. And I would be remiss if I didn't thank Jody on our side and our team. So respect and communication has been achieved in this community, and I think this committee, and I think that's very important. Before I go into the comments that I have, remember, members, what we have before us is a bill, and that's what we're talking about. And I don't need to get into a long lecture about personalities and all that. That's not what's happening here. But I will just say this. If you question our side's passion and you take that into a personalities, please don't. And I'll say it this way. I've been around long enough, and I've been in many committees where we could have put 25 amendments out with lots of roll calls and made this about that. We chose not to because we wanted to have a conversation. And if you look at our history and what we've done in this committee, it's always been about let's have conversations, let's get that out, let's not make this about roll calls and politicizing events and postcards. This has been about conversations. And I respect us all for having that. So how we got to there, you saw no amendments today because we want to talk about the bill. We want to have those honest conversations. So let's talk about the bill. So we are in a crisis, and one of the first things that I'll highlight in this is I think this is largely off of the governor's recommendations, and I believe the governor has too much power and input on the process. Doesn't matter which side the governor's from. We're still the legislative body. We're still the educators, and our process should be to put forward a legislative bill that the governor considers that he doesn't necessarily control. Just the way it is, and I've seen that change over the last many, many years. And so, unfortunately, when that happens, I think that there are points that we miss out and points that we have advocated for, such as fair and flexible funding. That's what we've heard from our schools. That's what we've heard in our testifiers. When I hear a testifier come up and say their biggest compliment to this bill was largely no new mandates, that's a concern. That's a concern that we should all hear. And while there may be ideas and things that have come forth about how we might mandate things or make a priority to mandate janitorial products and those, let's get back to the reading and math scores, because we're also hearing that. We're also hearing, when I hear MDE talk about the great recovery, but we still are trending the wrong way on our reading and math scores. So I think those things need to be talked about as we talk about this bill. So let me talk about a couple of things on the bill. And since we have a roll call vote, which I guess is fine, we're going to vote on the House floor anyway, but if we want to take it there, I'll be voting no on the bill, just so people know. A couple of things that I think miss the mark that perhaps, let me talk about the things that I think are good. Because I always, when I was a teacher, I always did the praise, question, polish. So there are some things in here. I think that when we see work of Representative Keelan, Representative Bakeberg coming together on the truancy, I think that's a good thing. I think that's a good thing, and I'm glad it's part of this bill. I do think, and Representative Norris is not here, but I'll catch him on the House floor, because I do try to talk to people and let them know when I see good things. I do think the $7 million is, as and Representative Ertl said this, let's start, let's try something. I don't know if it's the right solution. I don't know if paying stipends for student teaching is right, but I think it's a start. And let's try to build on that. Let's figure out what we can get, because we do need quality teachers. We do need teachers that can come into this with their passion and not just feel like they hit a brick wall. So, I'm going to give a nod to that. I think that's a good thing. I will acknowledge that apparently when you're the ex-finance chair, you do pretty well in the bill, and I'll leave it at that. Other things that I think we're trying to do, there's some health mandates, health standards mandates, and some other ones. We left out some of the long-term facilities money. I think there's good reason to believe that looking at improvements there in roofs makes a lot of sense, and I hope we can come back to some of that and get to where we need to be. We have an education bill in front of us because we have to. We have education needs. We have things that have to do. It is the job of the Education Finance Committee to put forward with that bill. There are disagreements about how those could have been done. You've heard our side. You know, our solutions would have been different, but the problems are still the same. And I think it's a good thing when both sides advocate for their solutions and we try to find to where we can get to. But that's just two sides trying to get to the right spot. And so there are some very wise, experienced, and passionate and caring people in this committee. And I appreciate that. I'm glad we've gotten to that. And so with that, I appreciate all the conversations. And again, I'll be recommending a no on this. If you want to leave the roll call on, go ahead. Like I said, I think we could pass it out here, voice vote, just to show our tenor and respect. But we're also going to have the same floor debate. But that's your call. And so with that, thank you to everyone that's helped work on this.
Thank you, Lead Prisha. Chair Joachim, do you have any final words on your bill?
Yes, Chair Clardy, thank you. And first, I just want to thank Representative Prisha for always having that open dialogue and conversation with us as we work through what was going to be on the agenda next week. And a few weeks ago, I just kind of let you know everything that was going to be in the bill, because I think it's important. And I do really think it is important for us to have conversations at this table and behind the scenes and bringing forward bills we can all talk about. I try the best as a chair, and I know Chair Clardy does, and all of the chairs in our building, to make sure that it's stays respectful. And if it ever doesn't and you feel it's not, please come talk to me, because that is very high importance to me too. I know we all talk, we have our little, people think we have our little talking points, but everybody does, and it usually comes from a place in the heart anyway. And I love hearing about the READ Act and hearing everybody's stories about reading. Mine was when the pendulum swung the other way and they went to straight phonics, and they gave us these little books that spelled the word how it sounded to learn how to read. I still can't spell today. And we swung the other way, and I think right now with the READ Act, we have it just right. We have it right in the middle, and it's going to take time. And we did spend $92 million last year on this. And the reason why it was structured the way it was is because our districts also asked for time. They also needed time to implement it. We couldn't throw all this money and expect it to happen overnight. And then we reiterated and looked at it again and said, oh, wait a minute, there's this curriculum pot of money that's still sitting there, and our districts need money right now. Let's look at the best way to get that out without strings. And Representative Edelson, thank you. Thank you for all your work, and thank you for bringing that forward. And also, too, when I say 20 years of underfunding, I say it from a place of experience, because back in 2003, I was in ECFE classes that literally saved my children from me. I needed those extra tools, and there were massive cuts. There were going to be massive cuts to ECFE. So that's when I got involved. I got involved with Ready for K, which is now Think Small. I got on our K through 12 legislative action group at school so I could be the E, because I firmly believe that investment in early childhood and getting our kids ready for school is going to pay tenfold, 15-fold back. Because then we spend less money in K through 12 making sure that they can learn, because they're ready to learn when they get there. So, you know, having that spending on the front end is important, but I speak to that because that is where I started and that's where my heart is. And I do also believe in accountability for taxpayer money. I was on a city council. I like to be fiscally responsible, but we also have accountability to our kids. And sometimes just giving somebody money and then just saying, go ahead, do it, there has to be some direction there. And just like we'd underfunded our schools, we've underfunded that direction and that framework. And I think we are at a point now, though, where we're agreeing on stuff, like the READ Act and how we can roll up our sleeves and move forward. Representative Ream, you said that the best. We need to move forward for our kids. So attendance. I did not come into session realizing how bad attendance was. I need to start reading more articles out there. I've been hearing it from some of my school districts, but I wait to see if I hear it statewide too, because that's what we do at this position. We set policy statewide. And attendance, kids can't learn unless they're in school. And that is one of the reasons why we work so hard on the non-exclusionary discipline too, is because our kids need to be in school to learn. So that's something that I am passionate about too. But I think we have a lot of passionate people around this table. We have a lot of passionate ideas, and I appreciate the conversation. I would have been happy with you bringing amendments too, because we could have worked on something instead of just waiting to the floor to have that like bigger camera, floor speech, because come on, nobody watches us in committee except the people paid to be here or if they're really interested. So it is important to have those conversations here as well, but we'll be ready to talk about how we put this bill together and how important we think it is. And education is one of those unique things too, where you can't do a ton with one-time money in education, because you don't want to drop your districts off a cliff, you know. You don't want to just start something and then stop. That is why last year, not only did we have one of the largest targets out of that budget, we also had the largest tails target, because it rolls into next year and goes into the base. We did that with indexing formula to inflation. 20 years ago when I was an advocate and I started working on K through 12 issues too, we were talking about it then. We were talking about the special education cross subsidy, because the federal government has never fulfilled their promise of 40%. For our kids and that have special needs. They've never gone above 17, and we can't keep waiting. We structured the attendance pilot project the way it is because I want to get money out the door and start on the problem now, just like the attendance task force is going to happen. I don't want to wait for that. We want to start something. I appreciate what Representative Crecia said, what Lead Crecia said, and what Representative Erdahl, and I'll talk to him again on the floor about this. We have to try something. You know, let's start. Sometimes you can't let perfect get in the way of starting. And we also want to make sure we do it right, though. And we did do it right, I think, by setting up that Office of Inspector General in MDE and what we did at the state level to watch for grant oversight. So moving forward, we are being fiscally prudent with our taxpayer dollars. But more importantly, in this room, we always have to keep our students at the center. And that is where we have to look for our guidance. That's why I'm excited about having more student voices at the table in this bill. I think it's very important. Plus, they get civically engaged, and Representative Riddle will love it because then more kids will want to take civics. But no, members, all kidding aside, I just want to thank you for your time and attention today and your passion that you bring to the table and your lived experiences, because everybody has those. That's what made me want to go into journalism, because everybody's stories are fascinating. This bill that we have before us, the thing we're doing right now, right here, what we can do, what we have the ability to do. Thank you, Representative Pryor, for always grounding us. And, man, I'm going to miss you. And Representative Edelson, I am going to so miss you, too. This bill builds on investments we made last session. It provides our districts with flexibility and funds innovation. It puts more teachers in the classroom. It keeps more kids in our classroom. It takes a comprehensive look at some of the larger investments we made last session and brings more of our students' voices at the Capitol. This bill continues our investments in our school districts, our teachers, and most importantly, our students. And I'd really appreciate a yes vote today, and thank you.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. And with that, Chair Joachim moves her motion for House File 5237 as amended to be referred to the Committee on Taxes, and the staff is directed to make grammatical and technical conforming changes as necessary. And at this point, the clerk will now take the roll.
Chair Joachim.
Yes.
Vice Chair Clardy.
Yes.
Lead Crenshaw.
No.
Representative Altendorf.
No.
Representative Anderson.
No.
Representative Bakeberg.
No.
Representative Bennett. No. Representative Edelson.
Aye.
Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Representative Hill.
Aye.
Representative Jordan.
Aye.
Representative Knutson.
No.
Representative Lawrence.
No.
Representative Perez Vega is excused. Representative Pryor.
Yes.
Representative Purcell.
Aye.
Representative Ream.
Yes.
Representative Sensormura.
Aye.
Representative Vernon.
Aye.
Representative West.
No.
Madam Chair, there are 11 ayes and 8 nays.
Thank you. And the motion prevails, so House File 5237, as amended, is re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. And I'll hand the gavel back to Chair Joachim for her final comments and announcements.
We're adjourned?
No. We passed the bill. We passed the bill. She was gaveling for the bill.
So thank you, members. We got just a few more minutes of housekeeping here, so folks that are leaving can just keep it down a tiny bit. And Representative Clardy, thank you for hitting the gavel at the end. That's the number one thing you learn as the chair, is that the minute you make a motion that you're voting on, you have to hit the gavel afterwards, so people that look back at the tapes can hear that you did an action. So it's one of those strange things. But I didn't want to let us go yet without saying how much I enjoy this committee and the energy everybody brings and the experience that they bring to this work. And for the discussions that we've had as we crafted this last year's bill and the one before us today. We really do, I believe, honestly, share a common value, making sure that our schools are meeting our students' needs so that they can lead a bright future for themselves and, frankly, for all of us. And the goal of putting students at the center of our work is something I think is very important to all of us, too. So thank you. And we couldn't do this work at the Capitol without all the other amazing folks that work here and help us do our work. I want to say thank you to Barry LaGrave for House Public Information and Brian Basham, who's been our writer, sitting quietly in the back. Thank our revisor, Cassandra Rooney, who still will probably have a lot of sleepless nights. Our page, Connor Beckel, that has been with us all along. Nonpartisan Research, Tim Strom, Christina Parra, Solveig Beckel, none of you can leave until I do. And thank you, Jody Withers, our GOP researcher, for always having an open line of communication with our staff, too. And our researcher, Mars Beltenri Rehnquist, and, of course, our CA, Polly Sirkvenik, and our CLA, Shamat Abraha. Really, it really does take a village to keep us all on track, and we're lucky that we have the village that we do. So with that, members, no further scheduled meetings that I know of. So with that, we are adjourned.